Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And before I begin, I want to thank everyone here for coming, for attending, for those of you on the internet who are listening. It's my pleasure and privilege to share these glorious teachings that our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, has so mercifully bestowed upon us. So I thank you all and for encouraging me, for enabling me, and allowing me to serve you. Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 12, 7th text. Matu Garbha Gataha Viraha Saha Tada Brigu Nandana Tadarsha Purusham Kanchit Tayamana Astra Tejasa. Mathur Garba Gatho Viraha Sathada Brigu Nandana Tadarsha Purusham Kanchid Dayamana Stratejasaha Mathur Garbha Gato Viram Sathada Brigu Nandana Tadarsha Purusham Kanchid Tayamana Stratejasa Matur Garbha Gato Viram Satha, excuse me, Satthada Brigu Nandana Tidarsha Purusham Kanchid Dayamana Stratejasam. Please chant. Matur Garbha Gato Viram Bhagato Vira Satada Vigu Nandana Dayana Sushita. Would anyone else like to chant? Okay. Go ahead. Somebody. I heard a half a syllable. No? Okay. Matul.
Matul.
Mother. Garbha. Womb. Gataha. Being situated there. Viraha. The great fighter. Saha. Child Pariksit. Tada. At that time. Bhrigu Nandana. O son of Bhrigu. Didarsha. Could see. Purusham. The Supreme Lord. Kanchit. As someone else. Dayamana. Suffering from being burned. Astra. The Brahmastra. Tejasa. Temperature. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. O son of Bhrigu. Shonaka. So, right now, Sutta Goswami is speaking, okay, so that we all know who the speaker is, and he's answering Shonaka. So that's why he's saying, O son of Bhrigu, whom Shonaka is. And we'll talk a little about Bhrigu a little later. Bhrigu, just for those of you who don't know or have not familiar with that name, he happens to be one of the great seven sages, son of Lord Brahma, and very well known and famous as a Brahmin who leads various sacrifices and ceremonies. O son of Bhrigu, Shonaka, when the child Pariksit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by whom? Yes. He could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. Purport. Death generally involves remaining in trance for 7 months. A living being, according to his own action, is allowed to enter into the womb of a mother by the vehicle of a father's semen, and thus he develops his desired body. This is the law of birth in specific bodies according to one's past actions. When he is awake from trance, that means after 7 months, when he is awake from trance, he feels the inconvenience of being confined within the womb. In fact, it's a very uncomfortable position at that time. And thus, he wants to come out of it and sometimes, fortunately, prays to the Lord. Again, this says sometimes, not all the time. Some just come out as ignorant as they went in. And others remember at that time, it's very interesting, they remember why they're there and that the real purpose of life is to stop this cycle of birth, death, and rebirth, and that the goal of life is to achieve God realization. At that time, during that two-month period, and this is given in very careful detail in the teachings of Lord Kapila, for those of you who want to make reference of it, and he goes into a lot of detail in this, so that we can understand and know how horrible that situation can be. It's kind of like a torment, a torture. And he explains all the torments and tortures during that time. So, that's why he prays to the Lord for such liberation. He wants to get out. Please, I'm stuck in this little dark cavern here. Maharaj Pariksit, while in the womb of his mother, was struck by the Brahmastra released by Ashvatthama. And he was feeling the burning heat. But because he was a devotee of the Lord at once appeared himself within the womb by his all-powerful energy. And the child could see that someone else had come to save him. Even in that helpless condition, the child, Pariksit, endured the unbearable temperature due to his being a great fighter by nature. That's very interesting. Here he is. He's just in what we call the fetal stage, and he already has a fighting instinct. Of course, we have to understand, most of us already know, that Pariksit, from his previous lifetime, was a great devotee. And he becomes a self-realized devotee because in a previous life he was self-realized, as far as I understand. And therefore, his qualities or many of his feelings or ideas are already there in a minuscule, in a tiny form. So he has this power of endurance. It reminds us a little of Dhruva Maharaj, who, when he was insulted by his stepmother, Suruchi, he just couldn't take it. He had a kshatriya nature in him. And he was going to get even on her because she insulted him. She said, look, if you want to sit on the lap of the king, you have to be born from my womb and no other womb. You understand that? He started, his lower lip started to quiver, kind of like this. He was, he got upset, disturbed. Who is this lady to talk to me like this? I have a mother. I'm not motherless. You know, he's like that. So, of course, he went to his mother and he told her what he was told, and he was so angry and so determined. He says, I'm going to even be better than this king. I'm going to be better than Brahma. I'm going to be the best in the world, and you watch and see. Now, how can I do this, mother? So she says, well, you have to get contact. You have to have communion. You have to have association with the Supreme Lord. She says, well, how do I do that? She says, well, you have to have a sage who will give you guidance and direction and help. Well, where can I find one? Well, generally, they live in the forest. I'm heading out. Bye-bye. He did, just like that. And who did he meet? Of course, Narada Muni. So what I'm trying to bring out is that from a previous life, some devotees, even at an early age, he was only 5 years old then, and he was ready to bear whatever difficulties, trials, tribulations, problems, ants, bugs, mosquitoes, you name it, he'll take it, as long as he can be the biggest, the bestest, and the highest, and the greatest. That was his only desire. So, and for this reason, the word Varaha has been used. So he was a fighter by nature. So here we have the introduction to who King Pariksit is. Soon he will come out of the womb, and he will grow up. And he will be a very great pivotal point on how... We can't have the child talking now. Better take him or her out. Thank you very much, because it's a distraction to me and also to those who are in the room here. Thank you. By the way, this is Prabhupada's policy, so I'm simply following it. Yes. So I'm not going to speak until the child comes out. Did anybody hear me? Huh? Yeah, upstairs, come down. Coming down, okay. Hare Krishna, thank you. So, getting back to the point about, I mentioned that King Pariksit was a very pivotal point in the carrying out of the instructions of Lord Krishna before he left. Krishna was asked, you're going to leave now, and you came for a very important purpose. Whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend to this world to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium. Again, the word millennium, Prabhupada has his own special use of the word. Everybody here, I'm sure, thinks, not everybody, because those who read Prabhupada's books know that when Prabhupada says millennium, he means 4,320,000 years or 4,320,000,000 years. Keep this in mind. He doesn't mean 1,000 years. Okay, that's the typical or traditional meaning of the word of that word, millennium. And there's no need for criticism on that. Prabhupada could give his own meanings, whatever he feels comfortable. Besides, he studied from a different dictionary than we did, an English dictionary rather than an English-American dictionary, etc. So coming back to the main point here is that, so Pariksit, as we move on in this story, in a very interesting, if not ironic way, he was cursed to die in 7 days. He was a very great king, a virtuous king, a very highly rated or highly esteemed king. So, interestingly, Krishna did a very unusual and imaginative thing. He said before he left this world that when people ask how will all of the virtues, the good qualities, good government, how will that go on without you? You've just knocked off a few million demons and they're going to just come back. How are we going to keep the demons out? So the way he answered that basically is that by having kings like Yudhishthir rule, and Pariksit, his grandson, rule. And when they rule, and they give guidance, they give direction, they give help, they give understanding, and they make things very firm, and also very smooth and kind and gentle and sweet too. Nice balance, nice mix. Not all one dictatorial, and the other just cream puff, pushover. Not at all. So that's the way it would happen. And the way Krishna arranged this is that one day, King Pariksit, he was out hunting, and he was very thirsty, he was very hungry, and he wandered into a, he was in the forest, wandered into a kutir of Samikya Rishi. Now, here's what's interesting about this. King Pariksit, he's very astute, very knowledgeable. So when he entered the kutia, Samikya Rishi was sitting there in meditation, and he could see nothing, hear nothing, smell nothing, taste nothing. He was out of his body, so to speak. He was in another plane, another platform. Pariksit would normally know that. Because, as I said, he's a self-realized soul. It doesn't take much for a great soul like him to be able to identify a person's consciousness. This is his very special situation. So he went in there and he said, please, I need some water. I'm thirsty. But the rishi didn't mention, he didn't move, he didn't do anything. He says, I said I need some water, and I'm also hungry. No movement. Now, he should have known that he doesn't hear. He's like a deaf person. He doesn't see. His eyes are closed. But that's an arrangement by Yogamaya through Krishna. And so what happened? He got angry, which is rather unusual for King Pariksit to get angry. Things don't bother him. He's normally peaceful. He's calm. He's controlled. He's focused. He's centered. That's his normal consciousness. But here he's not. He's in a different consciousness, which obviously has been generated through the process or through the energy of Yoga Maya. So the king got really stormy and angry. He says, what do you think? You're better than me because you're a Brahmin and I'm a Kshatriya? Is that why you're not talking to me? What do you think I am, a dog? He's talking like that. No answer, no response, no anything. Meanwhile, outside, there are some children who are the friends of Samika Rishi's son, Sringi. They're just looking through the doorway, wondering what's going on here. Because they've never heard the king speak in this rather agitated, hostile manner. He said, all right, have it your way. So he went stomping out the door, down the few steps. And then when he reached the bottom of the steps, down at the bottom, there was a dead snake there. So he picked it up with his hand. It was dead. Can't bite. So anyway, he took it and he went back in. Boom. Little sound effects here. I went back in and he looked at the sage. He took the snake and put it around his shoulders, over his neck, and said, "There." And then walked out and got on his chariot. And he rode a little bit, a little distance, and suddenly his regular consciousness started coming back. And he says, "Why did I do that? That was right. That was foolish. Why did I do that?" And so we can see he was in a different consciousness at that time. And he felt very regretful, very strongly sorrowful about what he had done, because it's not the kind of thing that King Pudikshit would ever do without cause, without reason. So anyway, those boys who happened to be watching this from outside, they immediately went down to the riverside where King Pudikshit's son happened to have been. Thank you. Samikya Rishi's son. He was there, and they told him what had happened. So it's not a little boy. He was like maybe a teenager. That's what it sounds like to me. They didn't give the exact age. And they said, what the king did to the father. He said, "He did that to my father? He said, he's like a dog, and he's acting this way to my father?" And he said, "That man, he has to pay for this. He'll have to suffer for this." Now, this was, a misuse of power. Sringi, that was his name, had a lot of acquired. Remember, when you perform austerities and penances and mantras throughout your whole life, even for 14 or 15 years, you acquire a lot of what we call spiritual assets, which allow one to do things which other people cannot do, and which one might normally not be able to do him or herself because doesn't have those assets. So he had those assets and he said, "Just see my power. I will show that king where he really is. In 7 days, he will die by the bite of a snake bird." And it would have to come to pass unless the king wanted to repel it, wanted to dispose of that curse. Now, when King Pudikshit heard what had happened, he did not try to oppose the curse. He had this understanding that Krishna is in charge. Krishna has somehow, through this boy, had me cursed for some good reason. And what it means is that in 7 days, I'm going to be out of this place. Thank God. It's over. Because after all, I mean, he's an advanced soul. He doesn't belong here anymore. He belongs in the eternal world. So therefore, Krishna is giving him an opportunity to get out faster. And that's one of the reasons that he would not oppose. You have a question or a comment, Prabhu? I saw your hand go up. What's that? It's okay. All right. Whew. So, anyway, he would not oppose, he would not repel the curse. He could have done that. He had the potency of power to say, "No, I'm not going to accept the curse, and I'm going to discharge it, and that will be the end of it." But he didn't, because he knew that this was the plan of the Lord. And it was the plan. And it was a very interesting, very ironic, very unusual way in which the Lord planned this whole situation. So when he heard about it, that he was going to die in 7 days, he immediately got rid of all of his responsibilities and then went down to the Ganga and sat down on one of these Vyasasans there. And somehow or other, hundreds of different sages began arriving. Somehow they had heard. Remember, these are not ordinary people. They meditate. They can communicate with the Supreme Lord. They can be told what's about to happen, namely that the Srimad Bhagavatam is about to be narrated, and it's an event that no one who considers himself to have any degree of sagery or whatever you want to call it should miss. You know, it's like the movies, you know, some great Star Wars is coming out. Hey, you don't want to miss, make sure you get on the line early. So those persons, of course, there are hundreds of sages all over, including one of them is Suta Goswami. So Suta Goswami is the one who's narrating this to the sages of Naimisharanya, because he was there, he heard it, he listened to it, he remembered it, he memorized it, and then gave it word for word, just as Shukdeva Goswami had memorized it from his father. Some people may wonder, well, how could the sages hear this? You know, we've got hundreds of sages which go all the way back, and we have Shukdeva Goswami, he's only a 16-year-old boy, and he's speaking the Bhagavatam. How are they going to hear it all the way back? Well, there is a mystic power, which a person can, I heard, read about it, one Christian saint, Saint Vincent Ferrar, when he used to speak, 30,000 people would come around, in the 1500s, by the way, 30,000 people would come around him, and he would begin speaking, and his voice could be heard a mile away. This man had so many different mystical powers, but they were devotional powers. He never did these things for show, he did them so that somebody back there, a mile away, could hear him. And what he had to say was, of course, very, very interesting and very important and very valuable. Not only did he manifest that power, but there was another one. His normal or regular language was Spanish. He could speak Italian also. And in his audience, he had many persons of different languages. So some persons naturally were not going to be able to understand him because he spoke in Spanish generally. But the mystical power that was mastered or managed, this is not something he did deliberately. This was being done from within, from the Supreme Lord. And what happened is different people with different languages, German, French, Spanish, whatever else, English, all different languages, different people who spoke different languages would hear the talk, the lecture, the discourse in their own language. Yeah, that's an amazing power. And I've also heard it, this was with Vincent Ferrar, and also heard it with other. But this is only something that Krishna can do, okay? It's not something you go and you take a course in yoga for 3 weeks and then you can go ahead and speak and people can hear you in different talking in tongues. So the point I'm trying to make is that King Parikshit, he understood what had happened. And he went down to the Ganga and Shukdeva Goswami was there. He wasn't even wearing any clothes or anything like that. To him, clothes or non-clothes, all the same. All he knew is Krishna, 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 Krishna. And when we think, feel, will, know, long for, live for Krishna, it doesn't matter. He doesn't. Even when he would pass, when Shukdeva Goswami passed some young women who were bathing in the, maybe half a mile away or so, they were bathing in a pond there, and he didn't have any clothes on, so he passed them, and they looked at him, and when they looked at him, they saw that this person had absolutely no attraction to them whatsoever. It was as if he was looking at a stone. That's the kind of detachment that this particular individual had. That can't be faked, by the way. He can't, you know, put on a show and then think, well, you see, I was able to pass these women, and I wasn't even affected. Yeah, right. So they think they're not affected, but they are affected, and a little later on, it all hits, you see. But a person like Shukdeva Goswami, who is completely detached, completely in the absolute truth, completely filled with love of Krishna, as we hear when he tells this amazing, wonderful story called the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so everyone is very benefited from that. So this is what happens. He asks Shukdeva Goswami, and he says, what is a person supposed to do when he is about to die? What is the proper thing? How should I act? How should I feel? And so Shukdeva Goswami goes on to explain what a person should feel, what a person should do, what a person should think. And actually, we learn a whole culture is presented. And one who learns this culture and practices this culture is very advanced in comparison to the ordinary or normal human being, because he's able to enter into a different level, a different stage of consciousness, wherein one is unaffected, undisturbed, unshaken, unruffled from all the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that we all are heir to in this material world. So, therefore, it's an advantage. Never, not affected, not disturbed, not upset. Somebody says, "Hey, fool, hey, idiot." So he says, "What? What do you want?" He doesn't say, "Who are you calling an idiot?" He doesn't act like that, because he doesn't take it personally. It's not, he doesn't identify himself with his physical body. And when you identify yourself with your body, then you think when a person is saying, "Hey, fool, or idiot, hey, hey, you nonsense," then he's being called something inferior. And many people never want to be thought of as inferior, because they feel that it is a low position and it is a threat in, to some degree or some extent of one's life. He calling me an idiot, calling me a fool, it means he thinks he can beat me up, he thinks he can knock me down. Well, who would say such a thing like that? So, therefore, this is something that we can all aspire to. This wonderful, amazing, awesome condition of total inner peacefulness, characterized by pure devotional love and bliss. When a person has that, then nothing bothers, nothing upsets, nothing shakes him. And this is what Parikshit should have manifested when he was in the Kutia, but he didn't, because he was under this consciousness of Yogamaya. So for those of you who don't know the difference between Yogamaya and Mahamaya, let me just briefly explain. And first of all, Yogamaya is the work of Krishna. And it's done in pursuance of furthering the mission of Krishna. So when Maya means illusion. So when one is in illusion, such as Parikshit was put in illusion, he was made to think that this Samika Rishi was awake and could hear and could understand, but he couldn't. So that's an example of Yogamaya. There are so many others that we can call into. And then Mahamaya is a different. It doesn't further Krishna's mission. It attempts to further the individual's mission, but actually it doesn't further it at all. It deteriorates it. It downgrades it. It destroys it. And it causes a person to become lower than he or she is. In other words, what it does is it makes you think that something is good, something is beneficial. Lust is good. That's what you start thinking. Lust. Oh, what's wrong with anger? Some of the psychologists say, yeah, you should let your anger out. And so what if somebody bashes your nose in when you let your anger out? Well, I said, we have plastic surgeons now, so it doesn't even matter. So, therefore, they tell you that. You should let your anger out and just express yourself and just be yourself and all this kind of nonsense. The very opposite of the Vedic teachings. No, but one should learn restraint. Self-control is one of the Vedic virtues of a Brahmin. There's one of many, patience and tolerance and understanding and so forth. So, so anyway, Mahamaya, all it does is it entangles us, it strangles us, it dangles us, it causes terrible suffering, pain, misery, uncertainty, doubt, in such a situation that a person really doesn't know how to get out of it. And he's generally so miserable that what do you take? What do? Where do you go? You take drugs. Now there's this big OxyContin epidemic in Ohio and Virginia and a few other places. It's an epidemic. That means that people go
by the hundreds, and they OD every weekend. They got 50, 60, 70 people lying out on the streets, and they put that Narcan, what do they call it, Narcan, and it brings them back to a semi-normal consciousness. This is terrible, and this is legal. This is legal heroin. So now the government has gone into competition with the crooks. So who's more crooked, the government or the crooks? Prabhupada used to talk like that. These people, you know, they act like they're your friend. Meanwhile, they're doing nothing. There's no control over this whole thing. And it's very, very unfortunate because it could be controlled with computerization now. Person goes and he gets 6, 7, 8 different prescriptions from 8 different doctors and then goes into different pharmacies. And no, the pharmacies don't... They don't coordinate their activities so that a person will, pharmacist can know, hey, wait, this person has gotten 6 prescriptions in the last 2 days. He should know that. But they don't know that because the pharmaceutical industry is being protected by the government, and therefore people are literally being destroyed as a result of this indifference, this uncaringness, until finally enough people get killed, and some of the senators and the congressmen and the justices, their sons, their daughters OD, and then laws start coming into being. That's the way it happens, you see. For many years, on cigarette packages, it was never mentioned that these are hazardous to your health. Never. But finally, when enough persons began to die, people who were in high political position especially, they had laws framed so that those rules, or statements would be put on cigarette packs. I'm simply trying to bring a point, is that we are very fortunate. We're so fortunate because Srila Prabhupada has exposed us to all of these things. This is nothing new to most of you, most of us who have read Srila Prabhupada's books. He's mentioned this very, very clearly, that if you want to live in a happy, fulfilled, satisfied, uplifted manner, then you have to take shelter in Krishna. And when you take shelter of Krishna, then what that means is that we chant his holy name. We glorify him. We honor him. We applaud him. We beg for his mercy that we will be able to stay and stick and never go away from this path. And so that we can also share this knowledge with so many others who need it, who are suffering as a result of what I've just mentioned. I mentioned OxyContin, but then there's alcohol, there's marijuana, legal now. You can go across the street, you can get legal marijuana. Yeah, that's what's killing the country. People are so woozy, so boozy, so unknowing what's going on. The consciousness is distorted, upset, upside down. People are driving on marijuana. You know, and what's happening? That's how this country... It's not going. We don't have to worry about the Russians. We don't have to worry about the Chinese. We don't have to worry about the Koreans. We have to worry about ourselves, really. That's where the problem... Because when we go crazy, then what can we do to protect ourselves? Nothing. So it's a very, very unfortunate situation, and we have a responsibility. Our responsibility as devotees is to share whenever and wherever possible this holy name, chanting the holy name, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshiping the deity, living in a holy dham. This is a very wonderful, great, glorious benediction that we have gotten. And so we should treasure it. We should cherish it. We should hold it dear to our heart. We should thank Krishna hundreds of times during the day that we have all of we have each other. It's such a wonderful experience to know that persons around me, they spend their mornings chanting God's name. They spend their morning dressing the deities. They spend their morning making foodstuffs that will be offered to the deity. To have such wonderful people as our friends, there's nothing greater. And if we take it for granted, we will lose it. And many have lost it. Those of us who have been around for 50 years or 40 years know how many hundreds of people were here and are no longer here. Not only are they no longer here, but the four regs that they once practiced don't even exist in their minds anymore. It's very unfortunate. And no one should think that he or she could lose it. As soon as you begin to become proud and think, well, come on, I'm fixed. I'm fixed, man. I've got Krishna consciousness right under my arm. You got nothing. You can lose it. You can diffuse it and be free of it. And then your life becomes nothing less than misery. Why should that happen? You know, it's like somebody gives us a blessing and you take the blessing and you just toss it around and you say, I don't need any blessings. I'm strong enough within myself. I can make it on my own. This mentality, which we are raised with, by the way, that you can do anything that you want to do, just set your mind to it. How many times we have heard that? So, since we have this great blessing, this great benediction that Srila Prabhupada has so mercifully bestowed upon us, we should be thanking Krishna over and over again. Whatever we receive in the form of association, in the form of the holy name, in the form of this wonderful Bhagavatam, all these things are gifts which are so priceless, so precious, so valuable, that we should be thinking, how did I get that? I've committed so many offenses, so many wrongs, so many bad things, and yet Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, is allowing me, is enabling me, is helping me to get out of this horrible cesspool of mentality that I've been in and come to real life, real truth, real love, love of God, love of devotees, and devotional loving service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? I see a hand go up. Yes, sir. Gauranga Prem.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class, Maharaj. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he said that the living being remain in trance for 7 months in the womb of the mother.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, what kind of trance is it?
What is that?
What kind of trance is it? A trance is it?
I don't understand what he's...
Trance.
Okay. Prabhupada is using the word trance in a loose way. He means that they are asleep, essentially. They're not aware, they're not conscious, they can't think, okay? That's the trance.
Not fully concentrated on the super soul.
Not like a sage, no. But they have conscious, higher consciousness to the extent that they can remember why they're where they're at and why they should not be there and what they must do to get to stay away from there. And so at that point, the soul begins to pray like anything, please, get me out of this and make sure that I don't get entangled again, so entrapped, so overcome, overwhelmed, that I will again lose my position and be back here again. Please help me. They can think like that. And if you go to the teachings of Lord Kapila, you will see all these prayers listed there. They're very fascinating and they're very alarming and they're very helpful because it tells us exactly what we should be. No one should be so sure and overconfident I chant 16 rounds. What do I have to worry about? You know, it says there, I'm going back to Godhead. Oh, you got a lot to worry about. You can lose the path. Did you forget that part of the book? So therefore, that's the answer on that. Any other question?
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Yes,
just a comment, Maharaj. In the purport, it says that only sometimes.
Right.
And in another purport that I read also, I don't know in which part of the books, it says that only pure devotees are able, advanced devotees can have this remembrance.
Yeah, so that's the sometimes.
Yeah.
That's the pure devotee, the sometimes. And the others, is the go to the earth and then go back to hell. Yes, another question? You sure? I'm giving you 3 seconds. One. two, three. It's over. Prasadam. Go for it. Hare Krishna.
Did you get my phone number? Okay. Because all you have to do is click on that name that's there, and then the actual email will pop up. You have to double, you click it twice, and then it's there. And you can come over one of them and just see what it might be. Or if you want to do it, unless I really say, you have to do it at my point, because you're already set up. You just have to do this, and then it's there. Then copy it, copy it, copy it, and then that's it. And then put it on my phone. She has one as well. Thank you.